Member supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And good afternoon for another edition of Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Dennis Worster.
And I'm Chris Horn.
Hey, and we're all here, folks, to, like usual, on every Saturday from 12 to 2, you can just sort of sit back, pick up the phones, don't be shy, you know, give us a call at 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415 with your computer questions, and we've got it. A panel of experts here that should hopefully get that all answered for you. You usually don't get stumped too much. And this is, like we said, a live show. We take your questions live and hopefully get you the answers. So, what have we got kicking in the news, Steve?
Well, one thing I wanted to bring up, I know last week was Father's Day, and I want to hear from all the dads about all the cool stuff you did. So call in and tell us about that. Chris, did you do anything amazing for Father's Day?
No, really just sat around, did some barbecuing. Nothing fantastic computer-wise, sadly.
Okay, but barbecue counts. What did you put on the grill?
Sausage from our favorite little market.
Okay, that's a good place. Yeah. It's a good time, for sure. That was the currywurst that you had the other day?
Yeah.
Oh, that was really good. That was good. Steve, what did you do for Father's Day? Anything exciting?
My son took me to like a little mini picnic camping trip up on Lake Ontario, up by Sodus.
And oh, fun.
Paddled around in canoes, and he had a little 10-horsepower motor that he putted around in the canoe until that quit, and then we got kayaks. And did
a little downgrade, but
yeah, and then,
something different.
Yeah, and I got my RC truck out and realized the dog hates, our host's dog hated RC trucks. And so we
chased it around.
Caught it. And we put it away real fast.
Too much damage?
Too much noise?
No, not too much. And the plastic bodies are relatively easy to replace.
Right. Yeah. That's the good news.
Yeah.
It's like playing fetch, but it's tired.
Yeah. And set the speed with it.
Yeah. Yeah, they're really fast. But when apparently most dogs are a little bit faster. And they turn corners better.
Yeah, I was going to say, in your reaction time, that's where you got to, you know, sort of throw that in, too, you know, is, oh, shoot, dog's after it.
Yeah.
Throw it in full throttle in that. Go for it. All right, tell you what, we're going to head right on to the phones. We've got Ed from Ithaca calling us right off the bat. Go ahead, Ed.
Good morning, guys. I have an odd situation. I think it's an Asus laptop. It's many years old. It was originally Windows 8.
Mm-hmm.
I just use it for email and for listening to web seminars and whatever. It's not been a problem. However, I went to turn it on the other day and it wouldn't turn on. That happened before. I took out the battery. I unplugged it. I put it back in. I tried it. I tried many different combinations of that, and it wouldn't turn on. I left it off for a couple of days, I guess, maybe. Mm-hmm. And 20 minutes ago, I turned it on, and it's working. So I don't know if it's the battery-type situation powering or if it's in the switch.
It could very well be, since it's that old of a laptop, it just might be the battery, and it's a dead spot. Because batteries, you know, through charging and discharging and all that, develop a memory slot, or what we call a dead spot, where, you know, all of a sudden it says, nope, you're out of juice, even though you still might have some, and it's got to set for a long time for it to more or less time out.
Huh.
And sometimes it's called a deep condition.
Yeah.
Where it drains completely and then charges completely, and the battery learns where those dead spots are and stops using them.
Okay. So if that's the situation, then even though it's plugged in and getting direct power, it still wouldn't start.
Some laptops don't work if the battery's not installed or not working right.
I see.
It's like power goes through the battery first, mm-hmm. then into the computer.
Uh-huh.
Yep. You can test that by taking the battery out.
Yeah.
If it turns on fine without the battery, and you know there's no wiggly cable or loose connector or anything like that, then you know it's the battery.
Okay, well, I don't want to risk it.
Yeah.
Well, you won't hurt it.
And it depends if the battery is easily removed, too. So a lot of the newer models, you can't easily remove the battery.
Well, this comes out.
Yeah, he said this is an old Windows 8 machine.
Yep. So you may be able to find a replacement battery online. The trick is, if it's, you know, like a 10-year-old computer, you're probably only going to find maybe 5-year-old batteries because they'll stop making them.
I mean, laptops and that have gotten so inexpensive nowadays. You know, you can, for your purposes, pick up a Chromebook for a couple $100.
Yeah.
Which is probably what a battery would cost.
And if it's an old enough machine, you may be able to hit the auction sites and find an exact same model with a much better battery than you have and swap the two.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. Okay. Well, thank you for your help. I appreciate it.
Yep.
I always appreciate it. Right. And I'm a member.
Thank you. All right. Good. Thank you.
Good. All right. Thanks. Bye.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, there we go.
All right, we'll call it out.
Yeah, that's, you know, you got to start weighing out the, like you were saying, the cost differential, because a battery might even cost you more for that old of a machine just trying to search around for it versus, say, just because he was only using it for mail and watching some videos in that, you know, and a simple Chromebook for a couple $100 will do that nowadays.
Yeah, and if you buy a new battery and that doesn't fix it,
You're out twice.
Right, not be able to return the new battery. And if you buy a used battery on a used site somewhere, you don't know how good it is to begin with.
Yeah. That's a roll of the dice.
I've always been leery, you know, especially on computers and that, buying used, only from the standpoint you don't know, especially the older ones.
Yeah.
You know, how well were they taken care of? And I've opened up some. And it looks like a forest going on in there. There's so much dust and debris and everything else going on.
A lot of times, newer batteries have chips in them that help manage the battery charging and discharging cycle. And you can read with software what those numbers are, how many charge cycles it's been on, what its capacity is. There's a really great program for the Mac called Coconut Battery. That will do that for Mac and iOS devices. I don't know of an equivalent for Windows.
Well, I think we could research that. We could figure that out.
Yeah.
Coconut battery, if you're looking at buying a used laptop, especially an Apple-branded one, that would be one of the things I would do. In much the same way when you go to the person who's selling a used car and you end up in their driveway and you're kicking the tires and taking a look for everything, Coconut battery gives you a peek inside of how many times the battery's been charged and discharged.
It's the odometer.
Yeah,
it's kind of the
odometer. With the more modern laptops, like the M1 and things, as those get older, you know, those go so long on a charge that I think that number is going to end up being a lot lower than we would typically see. You know, usually we would see batteries get around 1,000 charge-discharge cycles before they start to taper off. And then, but with newer stuff, you know, like I say all the time, I'm charging my laptop twice a week, not once a day anymore.
Yeah.
So, you know, I expect to see it be three times less when it hits when these models hit the aftermarket. So that number, you know, I would say prepare mentally for that to be a much lower number as we move along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've had my computer about a year and a half, and I've only got 53 charge cycles on it because mostly plug it in,
but it's
still at 98% of capacity.
Now, for a while, plugging in all the time was not so great.
Yeah.
But I think these newer machines are doing a much better job of
not getting the dead spots.
Nickel metal hydride batteries, very early days, if you ran it for 10 minutes and charged it for 10 minutes, eventually it thought it only had 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah.
That doesn't happen with modern lithium batteries. But there's still the chemistry involved, and generally every month or so, drain it completely, charge it completely, just to keep that chemistry working. Gotta stop those lithium dendrites from forming.
Well, let's go back to the first thing the caller said that made me not cringe, but think, hey, I should say something about Linux. Because if your laptop, if your hardware was designed for Windows 8,
yeah,
it'll run Windows 10, yeah, for sure. But Windows 10 is end of life. When? In 2 years?
Yeah.
Not long.
And
Linux is free.
Yeah, Linux, sure, it can run on the older machines. Doesn't need a heck of a lot of power like the Windows 10 and Windows 11 does currently. You know, it just assumes that you've got all this power. And then you're installing software that also assumes that, you know, oh, since you're running Windows 10 and 11, you've got all this great power. And people are going, no, it's quite an old machine. And
if you haven't tried Linux in the last 5 years or so, there's been a lot of improvements. You know, it's a lot easier to use now.
It is so easy.
Many other,
this might be the year of Linux.
Maybe. Yeah. On the desktop or on the laptop or somewhere.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you've got printers or scanners or other peripherals that you use, the driver support for those peripherals is better now.
Yeah, well, that's why we tell a lot of folks, and he'd be the prime example right there if he could get the battery going, is we tell folks all the time, if you've got an older box laying around, try throwing Linux on it. Because they make so many different flavors, literally different flavors now, that you can get it to look like a Windows environment or a Mac environment or the Linux. And they've got different features that, you know, you'd be quite surprised. And the other big thing, and like any other software, I won't say that they don't get any, but for the most part, viruses, spyware, malware don't appear in Linux.
Not as a user, as a consumer.
Yeah, no, they're just not there. So, you know, it's one less thing that you have to worry about. And
we're Windows 8, but Windows 7, if you're running an OS where there's no security updates, you're
leave the door wide open.
Yep.
One bad click.
And you still have to worry about fake messages. Mm-hmm. We had three computers come in this week that said they had a virus. And it was a relatively new attack, I guess is the word, rather than an ad on a website saying you have a virus, call this phone number. Websites now can offer to give you notifications. So you go to a news website, it will notify you about new news.
Yeah.
And so one person got tricked because the malicious website says, click here to prove you're not a robot. And she did.
Oh.
And that subscribed her to notifications from that website. So it started sending dozens of notifications about you're infected with this virus. You better call this phone number. And we saw three machines that had that in. So there's a new malware guy online.
What a mess.
Yeah, yep. That's why we say, you know, that's the big thing now. Viruses aren't as proliferal as they were before.
But the old ones are still out there, still running. Oh, yeah, so you bring an old computer online, it'll get infected in minutes.
But the new thing is these spyware and malware.
Yeah.
Because they want to trick you into getting your money. That's how they make it. They finally, I don't know whether you want to call it smartened up, but they've taken advantage of folks that they'll splash something on their screen, say, yeah, your machine's infected with this virus. Call this number right away before you do anything else. Your data's at risk.
I had one poor woman this week. Her credit card got compromised, and so the bank sent her a new one. She's calling companies to give them the new credit card number, and one of them was EasyPass.
Okay.
She Googled it and got EasyPass New Jersey. And so when she's telling them her account number, they can't find it because she's not an EasyPass New Jersey. So then she got a message from her bank that someone tried to withdraw money. So we're thinking, I'm trying to always give them the benefit of the doubt. EasyPass New Jersey tried to sign her up and tried to do money.
Oh, right.
So then they wanted remote access to her computer to clean things out because obviously you're being attacked. And the irony is that they're not lying. You are being attacked right now by them.
Right. Good news.
Yeah.
So but, that must have been for
so, right. So then she had to cancel that brand new credit card and call for another brand new credit card.
Yeah, if anyone ever on over the phone.
Yep.
Asked to set up remote access to your computer. Hang up. You're steps away from being a victim.
Oh yeah, Matter of fact, I had a young lady just last week. She brought over her computer to me. She goes, "Dave, what am I going to do with this?" And it's a typical message, that, you know, says, "Call this number." I says, "I can take care of that for you." She says, "What are you going to do? What are you going to do?" Set it down, hit the off button.
Yeah, close the window.
She goes, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" I says, "Just wait." Yeah. Turned it back. I says, "There you go." It was gone.
It's a lot of times those are fake ads on websites, yeah. And if you close that fake window, but you're still on the website that's infected, it can come back.
Yeah, that's why.
You know, 10, 15 minutes later, the web authors have found it and removed it, so it won't come back.
Yeah, so I just turned the thing off, brought it back on, and she goes, "Now am I going to get reinfected?"
Just don't go clicking
on stuff. She's
And that's part of the problem. You don't have to click on these malicious ads. Just displaying the ad in the web page can bring up the fake message. So a lot of people run ad blockers. But then web pages don't work when you have ad blockers on and they ask you to whitelist them. So then the malicious thing gets through.
Yeah.
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 Well, they don't. Unless you have an ad blocker that detects ad blocker detectors.
Yeah. Who was it? There was one website. Was it Forbes?
There's a bunch of them.
Well, the bunch of them, they have blocker detectors. So then you have a blocker detector on your system, and they have a blocker detector.
That's fine.
Well, and most of the time, you know, these big commercial sites that want you to turn your ads back on, they have so many ads on the screen anyway. Right. We kind of tuned ourselves out into seeing the ads anymore, but they get activated by displaying on your computer, and then suddenly it says, you know, "Click here to prove you're not a robot," and you get infected because you asked for it and it gave it to you.
But it's not generally the first party ads,
right?
Third
party ad networks,
right? The ad networks that also outsource,
And that's the thing. You could search on one thing. That's what really ticks me off. Is you could search on one thing or just pause on one thing just to see what it is. And then all of a sudden you're inundated with, it seems like, 16,000 of those variations, you know, whether it's, buying anything in a local store, you know.
My favorite of the local news sites, when you go to look at it at the site, first of all, the news story consists of about four sentences, which is the first thing that drives me crazy. Secondly, is the ads load, but they load progressively, which means you go to read the headline and you read the first three words and then poof, the headline jumps down the page. And then you scroll down to where the headline is so you can finish reading it, and then poof, it scrolls down the page further.
Because it put an ad above the headline to push it down.
So you got to keep going down.
Or the ads that follow you down the page covering what you're trying to read.
Oh, as well as the video ad that pops over everything that wants to tell you about the video report of the news story.
That's where I just sit there and go, click, close it down.
So a lot of ads will hide that small button, and so it's hard to find that close window. But so you have to...
And then do you want notifications or do you want to get on their mailing list and, you know, all these other things? Like, hey, can I just read the four sentences that you wrote? Would that be okay?
I'll go back to my search and find the next article on that. But you have to empathize with them a little bit that running a web server costs money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you need to get that money from somewhere. And here at the station, we have a pledge drive for sound bites. We have a tip jar. And... Someone is paying for that website, so they have to get their money from somewhere. And advertising has been the traditional model for 150 years now, right?
True.
Newspapers, the point of a newspaper was to sell ads. The fact that there was news in it was sort of a side effect.
That was to attract the people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
The newspaper's job was to bring the people and the ads together.
Yeah. So a lot of websites, we're seeing the same thing in television now, too. Broadcast television had ads. And the whole point of pay television is you didn't pay for ads, but now we're seeing ads too. So you pay for a subscription and you get less ads. I'm going to get no ads. So some services do have that. You pay, say, $5 a month for less ads and $10 a month for no ads. But then the ads they do show are for their other shows. So, maybe I'll give them that.
Right.
But
house ads. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's they have to make their money somewhere, but sometimes it gets too obtrusive. and some of the what I have seen a lot in the malicious ads, there's a very popular fake cleaning program for the Mac.
Yes.
And they, the company that writes it has a referral fee program. So I can get a little bit of money by running their ad on websites.
Right. If somebody signs up and pays money for the tool, then you brought them to the, yep, the shopping cart and you get a cut.
It's kind of like the Amazon referrals you often see, a commission for referrals. Yeah. Well, I've been on websites where there's seven different ads for the same program because so many people are in their affiliate system, right, that they, yeah, inundate websites.
Everybody's trying to get a piece of whatever's popular.
Yeah. And you get, what is a penny impression or a penny per million impressions? Or something.
Right. It doesn't cost hardly anything to run that ad.
Yeah.
And admittedly, with the information that advertising networks have about you, they are likely to be showing you ads that are more aligned with your interests. So, you know, I'm not going to get an ad for, pink Cadillacs, because I'm not going to drive a Cadillac and I don't like pink. So, but if it's for computer equipment or bicycle stuff or other things, you know, that's stuff I'm into. And apparently the ad networks know that about me. And they know, hey, maybe he wants to take a trip to Majorca in the winter and go ride bikes. So it's not uncommon that that they'll do things specifically. And that makes me a more valued advertiser for people who are advertising those particular things. And that helps drive up the ad rates if they have more information about who their potential customer is.
Mm-hmm. So the holy grail is I want to see ads that are relevant to me.
Right.
But the only way you can get that is by giving them all your information.
Right.
And the real cream of the crop would be when I buy that thing, stop showing me ads for it.
Right.
Especially if it's cheaper now.
Well, yeah. And I mean, if I could watch the evening news without getting 18 advertisements for whichever pill I'm supposed to be asking my doctor about,
yeah,
or any of those things, that would be fantastic.
And when you
some
read
of those
through
are
the
just so general.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, by the way, here's a company that sells insurance. It's like, yeah, okay.
Yep.
I don't know if you need that kind, but that's just the way it seems to work.
Yeah. Yep. And a lot of times, especially on those on the drug ads, the side effects.
Oh, that's hilarious!
Yeah. Oh, they read worse than the actual disease that,
yeah,
you got.
May include death. Well, then I'm not taking that drug.
Yeah, I don't want to know how you found that out.
Well, you got to sit there and compare, you know, what you're suffering from versus what this drug will possibly cause. And the one that gets me is it could cause death.
Oh, my favorite is when the parody shows, you know, Saturday Night Live or somebody else, yeah, do a fake ad and they talk about all the they make up symptoms and it's like, oh, this may cause hot dog fingers, and it's like, yeah, they come up with crazy ideas.
Well, because you know, you have when you're testing a drive, you've got 100 people, you got to record everybody's symptoms.
Right.
Somebody got bit by a mosquito and their finger swelled up. So,
right,
my finger swelled up. It must be the drug.
Must be, may cause swelling.
Yeah.
Who knows? Is it related? I don't know. But
someone reported it.
It seems like they may have had the opportunity to run multiple simultaneous trials.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know.
Well, and then there's ones that say if you're allergic to this drug, don't take this drug.
Yes.
How do you know you're allergic to it until you take it?
I'll ask my doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah, really. No,
for sure.
Hopefully, yeah, he knows. All right. That music tells me right now. A half hour has passed away, and lines are still open, so give us a call, 966-5299, toll-free, 1-800-790-415. The light clear. And we will be back very shortly with more sound bites, so don't go too far.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to this edition of Sound Bites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Dennis Worster.
And I'm Chris Horn.
And I'd like to remind you folks that Jazz Fest just started up. Thursday night?
Yes.
And we do have a tent down there. So if you want to sometimes check out some of the folks, you know, they are down there at the booth. Rob's down there along with a bunch of the other DJs. And when I used to go up there all the time, you know, at the booth, folks would always come up and say, "You're not what I expected."
You don't look like what I expected.
Yeah, and it's like, huh? See, is that good or bad? The worst, though, was when they came up, said that, and then walked away.
Somebody paid $10 to do it.
Knowing. Yeah. Whether that was good or bad.
See, well, but that's always been that way. You know, as a kid, I woke up to morning radio, and the same people every day, you know, fourth grade, fifth grade, sixth grade, seventh grade, and I always had this picture in my head of what they must look like based on people I'd seen. It would be funny if you guys had, like, an easel set up with a big marker and a big pad of paper, and they could draw what they think you look like, and then you could, like, pull yourself from behind a curtain. And they could try and match it up and see who gets closest to win a prize or something.
Well, like I was saying, though, a lot of the DJs are going to be up there throughout the whole week. So go up, say hello, and actually meet the folks one-on-one. And
It's like the old saying, we've got a face for radio and a voice for print.
Yeah. But there's the Jazz Fest is something you got to go check out, folks, because a lot of folks, well, I'm not into jazz.
It's so much more
music than that. My favorite was always Thursday nights, and what was the name of the group? Brain Fart.
No matter what you think is going to happen down there, something better than that is happening down there.
Oh, yeah, and there's free concerts right there on Gibbs Street.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a lot of great music, a great time. I've never seen an event like this, where folks, whether it's adults or with kids or adults just, you know, by themselves, having a great time and a mixture thereof.
Oh, yeah. It's a very, very diverse.
Doesn't get rowdy.
Nope,
I've never seen a fight break out there ever.
No, it's a great time. And you know that they're having fun. I work very close by, and my office is down in the basement. And I can tell because they start rehearsing in the afternoon. And all I hear is, and I'm...
What was that again?
One more time, that was... And you know that that's got to be significantly louder outside, but even through, you know, cubic meters of dirt and cement and all sorts of stuff, I'm still hearing it.
Yeah. But
it's
like
really something.
It's a great time. Go out and check it.
There's a lot of free stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the big headlining concerts, you do need to buy tickets for,
sure.
But there's a lot of free stuff just wandering around.
Oh, yeah.
Several stages out on the street. Doesn't cost you a dime.
Soul Stew. That's the name of that group.
Soul
Stew on Thursday nights. They've been coming for as long as I can remember. It was always Thursday nights, and they do, like,
just one guy named
7:30, and then they do a 9:30 show. Two different shows. And they would pack Gibbs Street.
Okay.
Five guys named Stuart.
Yes.
Yeah. And you know, so as a side effect, don't try to drive anywhere near downtown today.
Oh, yeah. No, getting deliveries all this week and last week, forget about it.
East Ev is not for you.
Yeah. But where do you park if you do want to go to the Jazz Fest?
Oh,
East End Garage
is
yep.
a great place to do it. It's literally right in the backyard of every place you want to be.
Yep.
And they've got plenty of parking there, I'll tell
and
you.
And there's lots of signs, I bet.
Oh, sure.
That's one on Swan Street, right?
Swan and Gibbs,
yeah.
Okay,
Swan and East.
Let's head back to the phones. We got Doug from Irondequoit. Go ahead, Doug.
Yes, I have two questions. I have a top computer. It's a Lenovo that I purchased in November of 2016, and it's got Windows 10 on it. And I can tell that the hard drive is failing,
mm-hmm.
and I've got one that I was going to put in as a backup, like as a second additional hard drive. It's been a while since I, took out the old hard drive and put a new one in.
Mm-hmm.
What steps should I do just to make sure everything goes smoothly?
You said this is a laptop?
No, it's a desktop.
Oh, desktop?
Yeah, they're generally easier. Yep. First things, make sure you have a backup of everything.
Yeah, I do.
All right. When you take the thing apart, one thing I suggest is to leave it plugged in, turned off, so you've still got it plugged into the ground of the house. So that way, once you lay it on its side and open up the side of the case, you touch the frame first, you're grounding yourself. So that way you're not going to get any shocks or anything else. You're not going to do any damage there. And then you can take out the old drive and put in the new.
Yeah, being grounded when you're a teenager, not good. Being grounded when you're working on computers, very good.
Yes.
In fact, we used to, depending on what you're working on, we'd always say leave it plugged in. Because when it's plugged into power, it is grounded.
Yeah.
Because most of the time, your computers have rubber feet, so it's not grounded.
Right.
So you want to make sure you touch a metal bit on the inside of the computer before you touch anything else.
That's why I always
suggest. So you ground yourself to the computer.
Touching the frame of
frame
the,
or a screw head.
You got to find metal, though, because some of the cases are plastic now.
Yeah. Well, even the backside where you're sliding in all the cards.
Yep.
And that, and inside, usually there's metal housing that'll hold the drives and all that. You can just touch that. And then, again, you are discharged and safely grounded.
Now, are you trying to save the data and move it over to the new drive?
Well, I've got the Windows key. I was able to get that. I'm just concerned whether or not I can still use 10 or if I have to go to 11.
No, you can still use 10.
The Windows 10 activation servers are still running for now, but eventually that will stop and you won't be able to activate a new Windows 10. Now, you'll probably end up needing to call Microsoft and fight with them because they will see a new hard drive as you trying to use the same key on a second computer, calling you a pirate and not letting you.
Well,
so you have to call them and well, it depends on how many pieces you replace.
Right. If it's just the hard drive.
Just the hard drive. I didn't have to on mine because when I got that new machine, it had an older drive, a smaller one.
Yeah.
And I put in an SSD drive. And I just had to put it in, you know, get the disk image from the site, download that, burn the image, and then it loaded.
Yeah, I had a couple of customers where we put a new hard drive in. We had to call Microsoft about Windows. And then when we tried to load their Microsoft Office license, same thing. We had to call them back again, different department, to get Office relicensed.
It's nearly a different company.
Yeah, because it thinks it's a completely different computer. But fortunately, it was relatively easy. The hardest thing was typing your product code in on
all
the phone
those,
keys.
Yeah.
Doug, do you have a plan on this is your C drive you're talking about, right?
Yeah, this is the main drive. Yep.
There's imaging tools where you could have your existing C drive plugged in, the one that's failing, and then plug in the new one, and then use that. And what it'll do is it'll reboot your computer and do a low-level copy from your old hard drive to your
ghosting
new one.
Ghosting it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ghost was a very old program that used to do that, so it's become known as ghosting. One of the best free ones today is called Clonezilla.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, some of the hard drives from the bigger brands come with their own cloning software to make a clone.
The thing that is, though, if you're going to go through this much hassle, I would just do it fresh. That way, in case there's any inherent old stuff, clogged up registry and everything else, since you're putting the time and effort to put in a new hard drive, start new with a new clean, fresh OS and just move the data. Because it's always the data, the photos, and everything else that are hard to create. Before you do this, though, I highly suggest making a laundry list of all the software that you have installed, so that once you put in the new new hard drive, you can go back and reinstall all the hard software again, fresh.
Well, not necessarily the software that's installed, the software you use, because that's one of the ways the registry gets all corrupted. Is you install this thing, it sounds cool, and then you stop using it, and it leaves all this cruft left over in the registry.
Yep, and also. One piece of software we recommend totally is Revo Uninstaller. You definitely want that one. That way, when you go to uninstall stuff, it will uninstall it fully, unlike Windows, which does a haphazardly job.
Windows is only as good as the installer the company has written.
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay.
So,
yeah.
Doug, if you search for Windows 10 Media Creation Tool, you'll find a link on Microsoft's site.
And I'll put it on our link list, too.
Awesome. And then what that'll do is it'll let you make an installable boot USB drive where you can reinstall Windows 10 on the new drive.
Okay.
And then
okay.
after that's done, you could connect up your old drive and then copy the data
by hand.
Yeah, your documents and
things
like that. Use it as a second drive until it fails.
Okay.
But the media creation tool, that's really the easiest way to reinstall Windows 10 or install Windows 10 fresh on a new computer. Same thing with Windows 11.
Yeah. You do this a lot, don't you, Chris?
I do.
On older equipment?
I do. I like to refurbish old stuff and then give it away.
Okay, so put that on a jump drive?
Yep.
Yeah, that's easiest because you're going to be have an empty hard drive with no Windows on it, so you need to boot something that can install Windows on that disk.
And if you have an old machine that has Windows 7 on it, most Windows 7 serial numbers will activate Windows 10 on up.
Okay.
Because they really want you to be on Windows 10. Mm-hmm. So if they give you any trouble with activation, you can always try that.
Okay, yeah. This actually came with 10, so, you know, back
it should
then,
be good.
I guess it was fairly new, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got one other question.
Go ahead.
I've got Spectrum email that I use pretty much as my email, and I've got Gmail too, but it's got a capacity of 5 gigs. Is there a way to totally clean that out myself, or do I have to call Spectrum to, have them basically gut it?
Delete all the messages.
Right, and that might take a long time. Right?
Yeah, so one of the
1,000 messages.
Yeah. Do you know if are you using their webmail interface or are you using a mail program?
It's probably whatever they gave me, that's what I use. You know,
so that's probably the web interface, and that's going to be bad news most of the time. And I've had to sit and do this for clients who've had full mailboxes and other things. The web is great until you need to do a whole bunch of things to a lot of messages at once.
Yeah, it only shows you like 10 or 15 messages at a time.
And if you're lucky, it'll have a checkbox that says select all and then delete selected. But then you're going to be deleting 10 or 15 at a time times however many it takes to get to 100,000, which takes for a long time and it's super tedious.
But they might have instructions. I'm looking.
Now.
They probably have instructions on how to use specifically the Windows 10 mail client.
Yeah, if you're using Windows Mail or like Thunderbird Mail, set up for IMAP so it synchronizes to the server, you can do a select all and delete really easily in that mail program and it will.
But you could even do that so that you connect up your Gmail account and your old Spectrum account and copy the old messages to Gmail just in case you wanted to keep some of them. Probably not, but if you did.
I've got the folders where I've actually saved the emails that I want. I think those are probably on the hard drive.
So the most important part is to make sure that you're communicating with the mail server using a protocol called IMAP, Interactive Mail Access Protocol. And the vast majority of all email programs you have these days will speak that language. They know what to do. But you can go in and tell that program about your email address and your password, and it will go and figure out which servers to talk to. And it will come back and say, oh, okay, here's a list of all your folders. And if you click into a folder, oh, here's a list of all the subject lines and senders. And at that point, you should be able to do something like go up to the edit menu and choose select all, and then hit the delete key, and your computer will chug as it talks to the server and say, okay, get rid of message 1, message 2, message 3, message 4, and it will do all that repetitively for you. But it will require probably that you either use the Windows Mail client or a tool that are available for free. A very common one is called Thunderbird that will do that automation for you.
And Windows Live, well, they've changed the name a couple times. Windows Mail, Windows Live Mail comes with Windows 10.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I've never seen a button that says select all.
It's a checkbox. So in the list of, it's not a button yet. It's in the list of messages, there's a checkbox next to each message. So you can check several, but not all. At the top of the column, there's a checkbox that selects all of them in that column to do a select all by clicking that box. Then there's a delete command to delete all of the mail.
Okay.
I will post a link to on our website on how to do that. But it does look like you have to do it one screenful at a time.
Delightful.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you're only displaying 10 messages per screen and you have 1,000 messages, you're going to have to do 100 deletes.
But you know what, Doug? Between you and me, don't tell anybody else this. I'm pretty sure Spectrum doesn't care about your email at all. If you shut down your account, it's just going to get wiped.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I mean, I can't.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you that for sure.
They're not going to go into it. And
right. There's no value to them.
It probably just times out and then.
Yeah.
Actually, before I made it home from canceling my Spectrum account, I turned in my equipment. Before I made it home, my Spectrum mail was gone.
Yeah.
Which is crazy because some of our customers have said it you can keep your mail. Same thing with Frontier. Most of the time, if you cancel your Frontier account, you can keep your Frontier mail. But I think that's because it's hosted by Yahoo, so Frontier doesn't have to do anything with it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Where Spectrum was hosting your own mail.
And they have an income stream they associate with just providing the mail service, just like Gmail.
Yeah.
Okay. So when you say shut it down, how would I do that?
Well, are you canceling your Spectrum account, and that's why you don't want to use Spectrum Mail anymore?
No. I basically just want to empty it out.
Okay.
Then
you're back to deleting each message.
Okay.
Yep. Get yourself a copy of Thunderbird and tell it about your email address and your password, and let it get familiar with all of your folders and all of your messages. And then you can tell Thunderbird, hey, I want to pick all of these, and I want them to go in the trash, and then I want to empty the trash. And it will act as your broker and communicate with the mail server for you.
Great. Okay. Thunderbird.com or .org or?
Great question.
I think it's
by Mozilla.
Getthunderbird.com.
We're all furiously typing, finding the answer for you. One moment.
Okay.
It's an additional service that we provide.
It's thunderbird.net.
And if you type getthunderbird.com, it takes you there too.
Yeah.
Either or.
Okay. I remember things like White House, you know, and sometimes.
Yeah. You never want to go to whitehouse.com.
No, that's a different thing.
Yep.
Not what you think.
Oh. Okay.
All righty.
Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
I appreciate the information.
Sure.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah, keeping on top of email is tricky. I know I've been a Gmail user for a long time, and with the number of mailing lists I was on and other stuff, luckily Google gives you a lot of space to work with.
Yeah,
but every once in a while I go in and search for things that have like the word. I have a search that says the word unsubscribe. So all the mailing lists I'm on that have that unsubscribe link at the bottom, I can bring up all of those and see if there's any I want to keep, and otherwise I just select them all and nuke them.
Yeah.
All right, let's see if
WhiteHouse.com isn't porn anymore. It's political porn, but it's not porn.
Still not going there.
Yeah.
All right, let's go back to the phones show. With that yeah. note and see if we can squeeze in Francis from Webster. Go ahead, Francis.
Hi, I'm just calling. I've listened to the last caller, and you said to leave the computer plugged in. And I do, but what I did is I take an extra power cord, and I actually cut power blade completely off.
Sure.
And then put a little tape over
that
it,
is
and
a
then
great
just
idea.
Plug in. Yeah, that way you're only grounding it, because you never know leaving something plugged in what's live.
And a lot of grounding straps that we use as service technicians, they screw onto the center plug, the center screw hole of your outlet.
Mm-hmm.
To ground you, because theoretically that's grounded.
Right. No, but the caller has a great idea.
Yeah,
I like
that a lot.
You can't have electricity coming into the equipment if there's no blade going into the outlet.
Right. Yep. Also related, his next step when he goes to install the Windows, no matter what number it is, they're going to want you to start a Windows account if you don't use one. And if you want to use a local account, my experience, I'm on 11 now, upgraded from 10, and there's no more skip option.
There is if you know the right incantation.
Yeah, well, what I found is you just click back and then unplug your internet or turn off your Wi-Fi, and then it'll let you create the user's local account.
Because you're not connected to the internet.
Because you're not connected to the internet, so then it bypasses it until they hear this and then
write you. Yeah. And if you do set it up with a Microsoft account, you can then switch to a local account if you want. But then you have your Microsoft account.
Right.
There's a lot of advantages in having a Microsoft account for storing your Microsoft serial numbers. They do that with Microsoft Office now. It was so common that we set up a new computer for someone, we installed their Office. All right, now we need your original license key that came in the box when you bought that. Right. I have no idea where that is. All right, yeah. Then you get to buy it again.
Yep.
Well, I already bought it. Then show me the key. Sorry.
Yep.
So now that's stored in your account.
I think I have a Microsoft account years ago, but I never.
Since they did away with those stickers. Should.
Yeah. What's interesting is that since Microsoft has so many different properties, that if you had a Hotmail account at one point, that's Microsoft. If you have an Xbox account, that's Microsoft. Outlook account, that's Microsoft. So pretty much everyone has a Microsoft account.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Like it or not. Okay, thank you. That's all I got for today.
All right, no problem.
Thanks, bye-bye.
So Windows 11, I know we just talked about the media creation tool. You can make a bootable USB for Windows 11. And on a computer where Microsoft says you can't put Windows on 11 on this, you can actually put Windows 11 on it.
Oh, yeah, you can figure it out if you want to.
And if you, because once you've made the install media, you can just install it.
Right.
And then I looked it up because I don't remember what it was. But during the Windows 11 install, this is relevant because, I'm refurbishing old computers, you can hit Shift F10 and it'll pop up a command prompt.
Okay.
And then the incantation in that command line tool is, it's OOBE / bypass NRO all together. And that's a script that will let you continue the Windows 11 install without having to make a Microsoft
account.
Is that
on the website?
So OOBE is out of box experience?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. There's always folks that are always getting creative, you know, as far as getting around the Windows stuff and that. And that's been that way since, I'd say Windows 7 especially.
But that's not
when they came out with, you know, the classic menu and that type of stuff.
Right.
Yeah, I think this is the thing that is really for the pre-install.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
For enterprises that are going to deploy an image, and they do this ahead of time.
I've been there. It was in my history.
Yeah. Right.
I just couldn't remember how I searched for it last time.
I did need to do that once.
Yeah.
But if you're concerned.
Well, and it's the trick is it's how to set up Windows 11 without an internet connection. So the way the caller said it is right, that if you unplug from the internet, it thinks it can't do a Microsoft account, so it sends you to a local account.
Next best thing. In the current Windows, I couldn't get past it.
Yep.
Yeah.
I tell you what, that tells me that you folks have been sitting by and let a full hour of sound bites just pass you right on by. But hey, don't fear. There's still another hour to come. We will be back with more of your questions. And again, you can pick up the phone and give us a call, 966-5299, toll free, 1-800-790-01549. And we will be back very shortly. So don't go too far. Get a refreshment, and there's more sound bites to come. So stay tuned.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's CGI Rochester International Jazz Festival, Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to the second half of Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Dennis Worster.
And I'm Chris Horn.
And just for you folks that are wondering, Nick is taking another well-deserved Saturday off. And hopefully he's getting some rest, and we're carrying on. And we've got Dan from Brighton on the phone. Go ahead, Dan.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're doing. How about yourself?
Okay. All right. I got two questions, two different areas. The first one is that I got a message from Apple telling me that the camera roll was disappearing at the end of the month. And I was wondering exactly what it was, where it resides on the cloud or on my phone, and how to save those photos so that they don't disappear when Apple discontinues it.
Well, that's not what exactly what it said, and I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to bring it up too.
Yeah, it's confusing.
PhotoStream is shutting down. PhotoStream was a service, well, I guess it still is because it's shutting down on July 26th, where when you take a picture on your phone, it goes up to the cloud, and then your computer looks at the cloud and brings that picture down automatically. The PhotoStream service did the last 1,000 photos or the last 30 days for free. And that service came out, oh God, an inch, you know, ages and ages ago, you know, 15 years ago. It has been replaced by the iCloud Photos feature, which does exactly the same thing, but iCloud Photos syncs all of your photos to the cloud. Not just the last 1,000. So it's a better service. So the side effect of that is that many people have more than the 5 gigabytes of free storage space in photos and end up needing to pay for additional cloud storage space. It's 50 gigs for 99 cents, and you can go higher than that if you need to. So you're not going to lose anything. What you may lose is the automatic syncing between your phones and your computers if you're not already using iCloud Photos. And you find that out by looking at your iCloud settings, and if the Photos setting is checked on, then you are using iCloud Photos.
Okay. So if I have an older iPhone, like iPhone 4 or something like that, chances are it's not set up for iCloud Photos?
No, iCloud Photos has been out forever, too.
Okay.
They used to call it iCloud Photo Library.
Right.
Back in OS 3 or 4 days, I forget exactly how long it came out ago, but it was a really long time ago.
And is there an easy way to download the whole iCloud Photo Library so that it's saved, say, on a hard drive or something, a flash drive?
Yep, you log into iCloud.com, go to the Photos section, and there is a way to select all and download to your computer.
Fantastic.
And for a Windows computer, there's an iCloud app in the Windows store that'll let you do the same thing, but in a more Windows-y kind of way.
Yeah.
If you need it.
Great.
And I would suggest doing it at night.
Because, yeah, it'll take a long time to download if you have a lot of space.
If you've got a few thousand photos there, whether it's Windows or Mac, I would always suggest just before you go to bed, start the procedure then hopefully by the time you get up, most of it will be done.
Yeah. And iCloud came out in October of 2011, so 11-year-old phones would still have iCloud Photos on it. But you may not have turned it on. So it's sort of a catch-22. If you turn it on, you probably need to pay Apple for more storage space. So there are people that have not done that because they don't want to pay Apple 99 cents a month.
And that's the scenario where you might have photos in PhotoStream that you don't have in your iCloud library. Right? Like if you never turned on iCloud Library, but you have the PhotoStream, then there's...
But those PhotoStream photos would have come into your computer by now.
Right.
So, yeah, grab a local copy of everything you can. And that's, I think...
For the last couple of iOS and macOS versions, the PhotoStream option has not been available. You cannot turn it on or off because it's not even there. iCloud Photos is the only option.
That was my first thought was, wait, is that still a thing?
So, to download the PhotoStream stuff, if it's not on the phone or my iMac, how do I do it?
Log into iCloud.com and go to the Photos section.
Okay. And that'll find the PhotoStream stuff?
That will show you all the photos in your library, including everything from PhotoStream.
Fantastic. Okay, question number two. GNS records. Is there a good place to look up the explanation of what the records are and which ones you might need for configuring mail?
Yes.
For a website?
There sure are. There's a great website called MX Toolbox that can do that, and I haven't been there recently. Let me look up and see what the address is.
MXToolbox.com.
Yep, okay. MXToolbox.com. You can go there, you can type in your domain, and it will tell you all sorts of fun information about it, including where your mail exchange, that's the MX in MX Toolbox, where your mail exchange records are currently pointed.
And they have a companion program called SuperTool that will look up anything about your domain. Your MX records, DNX records, SMTP, everything about your domain can be looked up there.
Fantastic. All right. I will look up all that stuff and probably have a few questions next week.
We'll be here.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's one of those geeky tools that we use all the time. You know, you ask a customer, who's your mail host, and they have no idea.
Yeah, all you get back is a shrug.
Yeah.
Right. You say, okay, well, what domain is it? And then you can put it in here, and it will spit back all the useful information. There are lots of tools that do this at the command line, but this one puts it all in a very nice graphical format that makes it easier to follow.
It structures it in a way that is understandable.
Yeah.
Much as DNS is ever understandable.
One of the interesting problems we run into lately is that so many people resell so many other services that I look up the records, oh, that says Google. That doesn't mean you're buying it from Google. You might be buying it from this other company who's buying it from Google. Yeah. Who do you pay for your email? I don't know. Talk to the accountant. Yeah. Okay.
Someone is paying
somebody for email.
Right.
And let's go back to the phones, and we've got Larry from Rochester. Go ahead, Larry.
Good afternoon, guys. I got in on the tail end of the conversation that I was calling in for. I've listening at the tail end. I've just went into iCloud Photos, and the last photos that I have were somewhere around the 18th of June. But I just left my granddaughter's high school graduation, and obviously I took a lot of pictures with my phone and my regular camera. Won't they update automatically?
By default, it will not update over cellular. Because it doesn't want to run up your cell bill if you pay per gig. But when you connect to Wi-Fi, it will.
Okay, I'm connected to Wi-Fi at home right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to have enough space at the destination.
And okay.
Apple generally will pop up a message saying, hey, you don't have enough space.
I just paid them for more space about 2 months ago.
Okay.
Now, and as a side note, that's one thing you have to remember when your credit card expires. You start getting new notices that your iCloud storage is full, and you thought you were paying for it. Well, your credit card might have expired, and then you got to put your new number in.
And then when's the last time you rebooted your phone? Because your phone is just another computer.
Oh, okay. I haven't rebooted my phone since I've came home from the graduation.
Yeah, sometimes it takes longer. You plug it in to charge overnight, and it will, especially if there's a lot of photos it needs to do. Mm-hmm. Then it will update the phone, the photo library. Sometimes you need to reboot to kind of give it a kickstart that, you better check to see what needs to be uploaded.
Okay, so I'll do those two things, because what I really wanted to ask is, I got, like most Mac users, or Apple users, I got this My Photo Stream thing, and I don't think I use that.
Yeah, it hasn't been commonly used for a couple of years. But it did start out with macOS Lion 10.7 about 11 years ago and iOS 5.
Now, one last question. I was going through my email day before yesterday, and I got a notice that looked very, very real, telling me my Geek Squad account had been updated for 5 years for $756. I did not open it. Because I don't have a Geek Squad account.
Yeah, that's your first clue. The second clue is that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
What it probably said in the message was, click here to confirm if you have any questions, click here or call here.
Yeah.
And then they get your credit card number to refund you, refund in air quotes for those people not watching.
Yeah. I deleted it, but I screenshot it before I deleted it. But what I wanted to ask is, had I opened that, would it be able to reach into my bank account?
Probably not.
Opening it?
It's very unlikely, yes. It would know you opened the message, probably. Because there's
meaning they got a live one.
Well, there's easy ways to put tracking pixels in an email.
Oh, come on, Dave.
So it can end up with you getting more fake mail because they know you opened that one. But it's very unlikely they could get into your bank account. They're trying to trick you into calling them and then giving your credit card number for the refund or talking you know, upselling you into more services.
Yeah, but just simply clicking on it or opening it. Like I say, they know, that's a good email account.
Yep.
They can then, keep adding those accounts up, and then they sell that list to somebody else. Now they've made money.
The rule of thumb here is, for any email you get, don't click on any links. Turn off loading images, turn off external content, however you can, whatever your mail user agent is. If you're expecting an email from, let's say, your bank, go ahead and click that. Right, like this is the email I was expecting. Yeah, I'm going to click that.
Right,
but otherwise, if it's a like, let's say you still had a Geek Squad account, is it GeekSquad.com or do you go to BestBuy.com to find that?
Yeah, and Geek Squad, which one is right?
Right.
Yep.
But I've never had a Geek Squad account.
Right.
So
you know it's not for you.
When I saw that, I said this can't be real. So like I said, took a screenshot.
Yep.
But I immediately deleted it. But since I don't trust anything, I immediately went to my bank account and looked. And, of course, from listening to your show about a year or so ago, I always have my card turned off until I know I'm going to use it.
Yep. Nice. That's good.
And then otherwise I just turn the card off again.
In most mail programs, you can point to a link without clicking it, and it will pop up a little tiny tip telling you where that link is really going. So if it said, you know, click here to for questions and it was BestBuy.com, you point to that link, it probably would have said something .ru or .in. So it would show you the real thing that it was linking to, not what the text said. And so that's one way to figure out if it's real or not. But that does take a little bit of detective work. So the safer assumption is the problem is to assume nothing is real. But then that Apple notice about PhotoStream shutting down, that is real. But there weren't any links in it. There was a comment that said, go to your Apple website and do this.
Right.
Yeah, when I first saw that, I didn't trust it either.
Yep.
And, no, you're rightfully, rightfully so. You shouldn't.
Yeah. Okay, well, you guys are a national treasure, so rather than me trying to play Sherlock Holmes, I'll let you guys do it and call in and stay a member and ask questions.
There you go. Thank you, Larry.
The safest way. Okay, thank you. That just confirms a couple of things that I needed to know, but particularly that $756, guys, that I know I didn't do that, Don.
I'd say sometimes if they wouldn't ask for so much, if they said $100,
right,
$50,
$75, $79.99,
they might get a lot more people.
Well, that's the phone scammers.
Yeah.
Like I might have been dumb enough to open it for $25, but for $756.
Well, you're supposed to go, wow, that's too much. I better call them and say that's wrong.
Right. That's the call to action.
Okay, I won't hold you up. Thank you, guys. And once again, you guys are national treasure.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Just don't get Nicolas Cage after us.
No, nobody wants that.
Right. Have you seen the stills of Nicolas Cage as Superman?
No, how do they look?
Horrible.
The old ones, right?
The old ones, yeah.
Yeah.
But it was before Henry Cavill, was it?
Yes.
I forget that he actually filmed a few days.
It was after the Tim Burton Batman stuff.
Hmm. And
but his son is named Kal-El.
Yeah.
Nicolas Cage is like, so he's a fan.
Yep.
All right, let's go back to the phones. We've got Steve from Greece. Go ahead, Steve.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I hope you're doing well.
Good. Thank you.
I have three questions that I bet you can answer in 10 seconds each.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
42.
All right. 30 seconds on the clock. Go ahead.
Is there
go.
Any way to stop floating video?
No.
Next.
Well, if you block ads, then probably.
What's your browser?
Chrome.
I believe that Chrome and some versions of Chrome Have a setting to say don't allow floating video, don't allow pop-out video. That's a feature that some of them have.
Okay, so like if I go to a lot of news sites and they'll want to, you go click on this article, well, they have a video they want to show you, or you can read the article.
An ad. Yeah, so that's an ad, and that's the job of ad blockers.
Well, yeah, you want to talk about
it's
you block.
Not an ad. It's some reporter telling you, or letting you, speaking out loud to what you're going to read, you know, like watching the news show.
Right. Yeah, they're trying to give you a condensed version when you just want to read the article.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's no way to block it, really.
Well, it depends on the site. It depends on the site. If it's an ad, if it's noise, then having an extension installed that I like, it's called uBlock.
Yeah, I've got Origin. Black Origin, I got that.
Yeah, so if it's still happening with that installed, that's the website. That is content that, like, primarily they want you to see.
Okay. I have a hard drive or a drive with about 20,000 songs on it.
Yep.
Is there a program that can randomly sample that drive and return random songs?
Do you want to play them or just get a list of random songs?
I basically, rather than me going through and picking out when I got so many, just...
Oh, pretty much any of the music programs will do that.
Yeah.
In Shuffle Play, iTunes, what's the one on Windows? VLC will do it. Winamp. Winamp is back.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a hard drive that, you know, you want to carry around and not have connected to your computer normally?
Correct.
That's a little harder because then you need a computer to play it from.
Oh, yeah, I've got a computer, but I can carry it from computer to computer and things like that. And it's I don't want to take up all that room on my...
Yeah, most music playing apps, you can point it to...
Any external hard drive.
Any drive for the source of music. In fact, a lot of them will do multiple drives.
What kind of computer is this?
Well, the main one is a Dell laptop. But
even Windows Media Player can do that.
Yeah.
But don't they do sequentially rather than a random choice?
Nope, there's a Shuffle Play built into most of them.
Yeah.
Okay. With the icon is usually two little crossing arrows.
Yeah, but I think he doesn't want to import it into the media management system. That's the tricky part of this.
Well, I know in iTunes and Winamp, there's a checkbox that says copy into library. So you can have it scan that drive, uncheck that copy button, and it'll scan the drive and play it from that remote drive.
Listing and not import.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you wanted to do it old school as like a command line kind of thing, I think it's kind of gnarly. But if you're just going to use a music playing app, playing it without importing it is the way to go.
Yeah. And last but not least, I know Windows XP has a very low limit on the largest external drive you can attach.
Mm-hmm.
Can you take a larger drive and petition it to the smaller things and have it work?
Hmm.
Good question.
Well, you can partition a drive.
Yeah, but would it, I mean... This is an example. If XP takes 4 gig, I take a 10 gig drive. Can I partition it into three different partitions and have XP recognize it?
I don't think so because it reads the drive first and then the volumes on that drive second.
Mm. Okay.
This Windows
give
XP
it a shot,
computer?
Though. I'd give it a shot just to, for the heck of it, to try it.
Yeah, it might work.
It might, because...
But why Windows XP? What about Windows XP is special?
That's the computer I have in the bedroom so I can read. That's my nighttime, I don't go anywhere but news sites.
Yeah. So Windows XP means that's a pretty old piece of hardware.
Yep.
And honestly, Windows XP, I wouldn't put that on the internet ever. There's vulnerabilities that it has that are just never going to be fixed, and they're direct from the internet. If you loved that hardware, then I would probably put Ubuntu or some other kind of Linux on it. Because then you have some, you can do all the Windows internet things you would normally do, but securely.
Yeah. There's a...
If it's just news, I hear you, right? Like, why switch? Why put the effort in?
No, I have a program I bought when XP was new. It's a photo program. It's better than anything I've seen anything I've seen since.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an XP program. So I can run it on other machines in compatibility mode, but it runs much better on the XP machine that it was designed for.
Sure.
In its own environment.
Pardon?
In its own environment.
Yep.
Yeah, I understand.
All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Steve, wait a minute. If you've got an extra drive, it wouldn't hurt, to pull the current drive you have out and try partitioning the drive and see if it'll work. What do you got to lose?
It's just under 2 terabytes is the limit.
Oh, under 2 tera.
Yeah.
1 T should be enough for what I need, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. Have a good day. It's not raining yet, but I'm sure when you go home it will be.
No, it's not. There's one of the clubs is doing their fun fly and swap meet today out in Northampton Park today and tomorrow, so we're hoping the weather holds for it.
Oh, no, that causes rain when you do those
things. Yeah, I know. Yep. Yeah, so Windows XP originally had a 137 gigabyte limit. Service Pack 1 raised it to 48-bit support, so you could do 2 terabytes.
So there you go.
So you need Service Pack 1. Can you still get Service Pack 1? I have a CD at the office somewhere with Service Pack 1 on it.
It's on archive.org.
Archive.org, yep.
Oh, yeah, I love that.
You should try looking up your program on archive.org, see if you can run it right on the website.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, there's a lot of old software is really cool on archive.org that runs just as fast as it did then on a 20-year-old computer because the new computers are so much faster.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you so much, guys.
Yep.
Have a good day.
You too.
You're welcome.
You know, like you say, what has he got to lose? You know, pull that hard drive out that's working right now. Throw the bigger hard drive in it, partition it, and play with it and have some fun.
Yeah.
But for that news machine tinkering by on your bedstand, that's like a perfect Chromebook situation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Even an expired Chromebook, I think, is better than Windows XP.
As long as it's still getting updates.
But even if it's not getting updates,
the Chromebook is still pretty safe. Yeah, because the Chromebook is pretty hard to...
And there's so many news apps that come and go. It's amazing. A friend of mine loved this one called News 360, and it was really great, and then they discontinued it. Because it pulled news from many other sources, which a lot of them do, and that one's gone now. So news aggregation programs.
Right.
Yeah,
if there was money in that, then RSS would still be popular.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, that's it. You know, it's all about the, like anything else, the bottom line, making some money.
Yeah. You have bills to pay. Really.
Yeah.
Yep.
And no different than, like we say for even some of this freeware that, they ask for donations and we keep telling folks, Whoa.
When in doubt.
That's what we tell them.
We tell them that.
Music, yeah.
Yeah, really. That one was a little louder than I was expecting.
This is the dance-off portion of the show.
Yeah, really. All right, folks, that means we got to take a quick break, but we will be back shortly with more of your questions, so don't go too far. We'll be back soon.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to the last half hour of sound bites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Dennis Worcester.
And I'm probably Chris Horn.
I haven't checked his ID. He just wandered in here, really. We said, here, talk into this and put these headphones on.
And
he looks all right.
Doing good.
Doing great. In fact, he may be here next week for all of you Chris Horn fans.
But going back to Steve there from Greece, his previous question, as like I said, was saying before, though, since he, you know, loves using that piece of software for a little bit of time and effort, you know, just to, if he's got that hard drive around anyways, why not just take the effort and go ahead, put it in, and see if it'll do it? Because you said, how big of a hard drive with the Service Pack 1?
2 terabytes.
2 terabytes.
Oh, so, and I think he was just talking about something that's maybe, maybe 320 or something like that, you know, yeah. Not huge.
Yeah, the 137 gigs in the limit in the first versions of XP, mm-hmm. 100 gigs, that was a huge amount. Of, I remember buying a 100 meg drive for like $3,000. And it sounded like a turbine winding up.
Yeah.
I can remember my first big hard drive. It was a 500 meg hard drive. And I had to break it up into 5 partitions.
Yep.
And this was a big honker of a thing. It was like...
Five and a quarter, probably.
2 5 and a quarters together, you know. It was so huge. And it's like, that's all the space I'm going to need.
Was it SCSI?
No. It was RRLL.
Yeah.
Yeah, my first one was SCSI.
Okay.
Oh, SCSI was always the
actually, fun. No. Did I get a serial? The first Mac external hard drives were serial.
Probably serial.
Yeah.
Oh, those
like
are
original.
The original Apple hard drive. Yeah, they had a serial interface on the back.
Super fast.
Yeah. To go along on that screaming, 4 megahertz processor?
Yeah.
4 megahertz.
Probably enough, right?
Yeah. So yeah, on the Apple II, I had got one later. The profile 5 megabyte hard drive could store every single program there was for the Apple II.
I wonder about that, not so much for storage, but for like display pixels. It's like how much, if you have like a 27 inch iMac Pro, right, and you've got 5K pixels, it's like how many original Macintoshes does that represent, and how many iMac Pros would it take to have all the same number of pixels as like every original 9-inch Mac they ever sold?
Yep.
And I wonder, it's probably like, oh, a roomful.
Yeah. Yep. All right, let's go back to the phones. We got James from Rochester. Go ahead, James.
Oh, hi, Dave and everybody. My question is, my friend was asking me, is there... anywhere locally is a good place to purchase a good refurbished Apple iPhone, and also on the internet. What would you recommend where to go?
There are some places online that are specific where they buy older equipment and either verify that all the functions work and that the battery is reasonably good and that the ports all work and the buttons work. And I think a quick Google for used iPhone will get you really close on that.
Check the reviews also.
Definitely check the reviews. See how long they've been in business. And many of those places will offer used phones that are rated. And they'll say, like, this one is mint. Or this one has a couple of scratches on the back of the case that you'll never see. Or this one has a minor nick in the corner. But they're usually priced accordingly. You know, there are no bad iPhones. There are only bad prices. So yeah. there are places online that specialized in what I'll call a secondhand market for that.
Yeah.
And they will take them all in and classify them. I'd say that would be a place that I would generally trust. Make sure you know what their return policies are and how you can reach them in case you have questions. But there are lots of places that are doing really well in that market.
And... Yeah. My store, we have some used products that we sell. Typically, when a customer will buy a new computer from us, we resell their old one for them. But Apple Corporate itself has a refurbished online store, and you can get discounts on older products. They don't go too old. So right now, the iPhone 12 is the oldest model of phone available on the refurbished store. But it is a place to find Apple. Factory refurbished, because that can be a different thing. Amazon has their renewed, where they refurbish it themselves, but there's something to be said for factory refurbished. And with Apple, the refurbished products still get a full 1-year warranty, and they're eligible for the AppleCare extended warranty. So that can add a little to your decision that if you can get a full warranty, you know, 1-year warranty on your phone, and even the AppleCare, especially the damage protection that AppleCare Plus offers, that can give a good incentive to buy that phone.
Well, what if I was going to...
Like, go ahead.
I was gonna, what if I was going to gamble on Facebook Marketplace?
Yeah.
Where somebody could say, yes, I can prove that I really own this. It's not a lost or stolen phone. What, right. what do I have to do to make sure that this phone will work for me? Good
yeah.
question.
Yeah. One of the big things that Apple introduced is called Activation Lock. And that was years ago, 2007, 2008. And what that means is when you log in to your Apple ID on any Apple device these days, and older ones as well, your that hardware is locked to your ID. And if you buy a used phone, when you try to turn it on, it will ask for the original owner's Apple ID and password. And that's a good indication that it was probably stolen. Or there's a big problem with people selling their stuff and forgetting to turn off Activation Lock. Yeah.
Or never knowing that, that was a thing.
The results is the same, is you cannot use the phone without the original owner's username and password.
Because it's locked.
Because it's locked. So that really cut down on theft a lot. So the thieves have to be sneakier about it to sell it to you and then disappear before you try to turn it on. So if you do... do something like that. You want to turn it on. Make sure you can log in with your ID before you let them go, or if you can before you give them the money. And then what? The other thing you want to do, especially with a phone, is go into settings and battery and check the battery health. So I bought a used phone on a national retailer, and I got Product Red because it was for Valentine's Day for my wife. And when it came, the battery was already half dead. It was like at 85% capacity. They didn't mention that anywhere in the ad. So now, you know, it lasted a while, and I was looking at, you know, $60-$70 for a new battery.
Whoa. Yeah, it sounds like the Apple website is a number one good place to go. Does your store have any used Apple iPhones?
I don't remember offhand.
Mm-hmm.
It would be on our website, which you can get from the Soundbites page about us.
Uh-huh. I will check your site, and thank you for all that excellent information.
You're very welcome.
Have a great day.
There's a, you know, the old caveat emptor, let the buyer beware. When you buy something used, you gotta hope it's legitimate. Right. There've been a lot of stories about people that have bought used stuff online, and a literal box of bricks shows up.
Yes, that's no good.
Yeah, now, so it's heavy enough to fool you.
Coconut battery. If you get the chance to hold the phone in your hands, coconut battery is available for iOS as well. So you can run that. Now, recent versions of macOS have also added a battery health section inside of settings.
Yeah,
that you can check.
It didn't used to be visible without something like coconut battery, but now it's in the system report.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. We got Rich in Irondequoit. Go ahead, Rich.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Who walked in?
question on a program or a recommendation on a program to use to record. I'm guessing a recording on how to use a program. So I want to make a recording of how to use one of these programs that we use at work so somebody else could just use it as training and look at it and say, okay, this is how you click here, enter your password here, you know, that type of thing.
Right.
Are you talking about audio or video?
Video.
Or both. You know, video is typically both.
Yeah, or both.
You'll find a lot of those types of programs under the podcasting genre, because that's what a lot of podcasters do. They record audio and video
how
to do stuff and send it somewhere. You can do it right on your depending on where you want to send it to, YouTube Live, like we're doing now. We feed a camera into YouTube and it goes out live and it gets recorded for later.
If you've got a Mac, QuickTime will do the screen recording built in.
Yep.
And that's the magic phrase, screen recording.
It would be a Windows type thing, and then probably just be someplace in a training folder on a server somewhere.
Yeah, there are.
We're doing some search
because I know Nick liked one called Total Recorder for audio, but I don't know if that does video.
VLC. Mm-hmm.
No, that's playback. Doesn't do recording.
Does it?
I think the commercial version. Well, OBS is kind of overkill, and it's designed to. So OBS is the Open Broadcast Studio, which is what I'm using now. That takes multiple cameras, so it's a multi-camera mixer, and then you can send it to streaming services like YouTube and Facebook and Twitch. That's probably overkill for a single recording. Now, in Windows, there's the camera app that you could just use to do just a straight recording.
So there is one in Windows.
Yes. It's basically record and stop record.
Okay.
And then,
but recording the screen is what you're saying.
Yep.
Yeah. And it can can record from your camera as well.
Okay.
And then, let me see, there is a, built into Windows 11 is the snipping tool that allows you to grab an image from your screen and to record images on the screen as well.
Maybe I'll try that. I've used the snipping tool for other things.
The upside to trying something complicated like OBS is that a lot of people use it because it's free. It has a lot of features. And on YouTube, there's a lot of instructional
videos. There's a ton of instructions on how to use OBS. OBS.
I might try that. It's not like I need to have it done yesterday.
Yeah, the nicest thing about OBS is it can take multiple cameras simultaneously. So if you look at our video now, I've got three cameras set up. In quadrants, with the fourth quadrant is the show information, and it's all being recorded simultaneously, and then streamed out to. So I'm right now we're streaming to YouTube, Facebook, and Twitch.
And if you're watching a video stream, we apologize.
All right. Well, sounds good. You gave me some good ideas. I'll take a look at some of those things and see what I can find there.
There you go.
Okay, have a great weekend.
You too.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, that's kind of the common thing now. Everyone is a podcast producer. Everyone's making recordings with their phone and uploading them
and
to places.
And doing YouTube.
If you're lucky enough to hit, you can actually earn good money off of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you might as well win the lottery then.
Yeah.
There's a lot of kids out there that think they're going to have a career streaming Twitch or YouTube or something.
There's a South Park episode 20 years ago where Cartman and the boys went to YouTube headquarters demanding their YouTube money because they had a viral video.
Oh, right. And the Chocolate Rain guy. Waiting room.
And Mikey punched me. What was it?
Bit my finger.
Yeah. All those early YouTube viral sensations were all waiting in the waiting room at YouTube headquarters waiting for their YouTube money.
I missed that one.
Yeah, wouldn't say you
thankfully.
Missed it.
Yeah.
Could say it was during my time, but didn't stop to see it.
What is Tay up to these days? Tay Zonde, the Chocolate Rain guy. 136 million views back when that was 2007, when 136 million was a lot. And then Psy got, over 2 billion and broke YouTube's 32-bit integer view counter.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, so he's a songwriter, voice actor, and singer today.
Yeah, we see I'm thinking about screen recording. There's a lot of people that are using that for putting up tutorials online. You know, it's very common to see all kinds of content on every possible thing that you could ever want to do with a computer. And people are actively describing it and pointing on the screen, and it's usually a great way to get the information that you really need. And you can watch it again and again and again.
Yep. Well, not only that, just other things. Like,
and it doesn't have to be, technology.
I had to one time change the belt on my John Deere snowblower.
Sure.
All I did was go into YouTube and say John Deere, and I said the name of the tractor, and it pulled it up. There was a YouTube, and it showed me the easy way to take off the old belt because it had stretched
out. How the routing goes to put it back on.
On the new one, and he goes, yeah, because normally they want you to pull this and this, and I found that if you just loosen this, and I had it done within a few hours.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it's out there. And the same, I think it was HHR, changing the headlight on that, I'm looking around because I blew a headlight on it and trying to figure out how the heck to do it. Sure enough, I go onto YouTube. It says, yeah, you got to go along the whole bumper or the fender, the wheel well there, take out all these bolts, pull that back, stick right. something in there to help it so you don't get your arm pinched, reach up in there and pull out the light.
How frustrated do you have to be with something? Before you make an instructional video to save everyone else.
One of the things I like about some of those YouTube videos is they leave their mistakes in. So I'm always telling my wife, she loves watching home improvement shows, look how easy it is to re-wallpaper that. No, it's not.
Yeah, it's half an hour.
Yeah, they have 20 guys behind the camera, and they came back 3 weeks later, and it was done. No, it's not easy.
It takes time.
Yeah.
Unless they shoot the show at your house, and then you just wait at craft services and let them all do it.
I used to like watching the old Yankee Workshop.
Yeah.
And he'd sit there and make all this glorious furniture and cabinets and everything else. You know, of course, he had a workshop was to kill for. And, you know, he also had his staff helping him make sure all the cuts were right and everything else. And he just... we just go ahead and assemble it. But they don't show you the time that he had to spend cutting these out.
Knowledge ahead of time. Yeah. I recently read something about Bob Ross, the painter from PBS.
Oh, yeah.
He would do a whole painting right in front of you. They're all available online now. It's just amazing watching him start from a blank canvas in half an hour. He has a real painting. And somebody one time said, you know, I love your work, Bob, but I can't paint because I'm colorblind. I can't see colors. So he did a whole painting in grays, shades of, and it was beautiful, just with no color in it. And anyone can do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just I still use stick figures. I haven't got beyond that stage.
It works for XKCD.
Yeah,
XKCD. Oh God, I love XKCD.
Well, you have to explain what it is now.
Yeah, it's a science technology.
It's a comic online where they take they make jokes about science and mathematics.
A web comic of romance, sarcasm, math, and language.
And every once in a while, they have some really fun games you can play with your keyboard inside, where they make interactive tools.
And then there's a companion website called Explain XKCD.
Right, in case you don't quite get it. Right.
But he, Randall Monroe, the author, he wrote a book, another website called What If, and he also wrote a book about it. And it's these weird scientific questions, and he actually looks in and researches it. And one of my favorites is, what would happen if you had a mole of moles?
Okay. 6.23 times 10 to the 28th.
So we're coming up, coming up on Avogadro's number.
Right.
And so he scientifically explains it. The mass of the moles it'd be about the size of the moon, but their combined mass would generate their own gravity and would collapse into a black hole and destroy the Earth. Almost every question ends up with and destroy the Earth.
Yeah.
What happens if you could throw a baseball at the speed of light? Well, it would cause a fusion reaction as the molecules in front of the baseball fused together and destroy the Earth. So one of the big common tropes in science fiction are space elevators.
Right.
So we want to put a space elevator 28,000 miles high. With a line connected. Well, it's 28,000 miles. How long would it take you to drive 28,000 miles? How long would it take you to fly 28,000 miles? Because that's the fastest thing we've got now. Even rockets, the current, SpaceX takes 8 minutes to go 100 kilometers.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to go, 30,000 kilometers up to a space elevator. But that thing has to be moving through the air molecules.
Right.
At 28,000 miles an hour? Is that orbital speed up there?
I believe
that high up?
Yeah,
it's sort of. 17,000 miles an hour at low Earth orbit. And so a space elevator would need to be made out of ridiculously strong things. Somehow they'd have to overcome air friction. And
space debris.
Yeah. And so there was one at XKCD about like a fireman's ladder. We'll put a fireman's ladder to the moon. And how long would it take you to walk up the ladder? Well, gravity would be lower, so that'd be great. But then you're running out of air, so that'd be bad.
Right.
But then when you get closer to the moon,
moon gravity
is going to grab you, and now you're going to crash on the moon and die. And when you come back, as soon as Earth gravity grabs you, you're going to crash on the Earth and die.
Yeah, you need one of those.
Well, just re-entry.
Yeah, Felix Baumgartner.
Yeah, you need that Red Bull guy. Yeah.
Re-entry was going on.
Yep.
Bitch, too.
With a spacesuit at 300,000 feet or whatever his altitude record was.
And the visor frosts over and you can't tell how you're tumbling through the
Really crazy crazy stuff. So both XKCD and What If. And he actually came out with a paper book of What If. He's on What If 2 is out now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think he's got a fresher one.
Yeah.
Makes a great and gift.
The cover, picture is a
dirtier version of the Far Side.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's pretty close.
The cover picture is a dinosaur climbing on top of an airplane.
Awesome.
I want to read that story now.
Go on. Is he wearing a little pilot's helmet?
Nope. The cue ball and Megan are stick figures are at the bottom of the cover.
Oh, my goodness. My favorite is the picture they have of the Saturn V rocket, but then they describe everything using only the most 1,000 common English words.
Upgoer 5.
So they call it the Upgoer 5.
Yeah.
And they point a picture at the engines at the bottom, and they say, this is where the fire comes out. If this engine, if this end is pointed towards the sky, you are not going into space today.
Yep. Pointy end up.
That's a fantastic poster.
Yeah. It should be a mode for the chat GPT AI stuff.
Oh, right. Well, they have simple Wikipedia that tries to do all the articles using very common language.
I just read something about, so chat GPT is authoritatively wrong in many of its answers.
Yeah.
And I just read a case where a judge threw out a petition because of fake citations from ChatGPT in the case notes.
And that lawyer got censured, I believe.
Yeah.
Right. If you leave in the as a language learning model phrase in your legal documents, then you kind of ask for it.
Pro tip, don't make stuff up if you're going to be in court.
Yeah.
No, it's bad. You're going to have a bad time.
Who knew?
The judges, mostly.
Oh.
That was during the pandemic. There were video cases where everyone's on video, and the one lawyer, the cat filter got turned on, and
by the granddaughter,
he didn't know how to turn it off.
I'm not doing this.
So it was a picture of a cat, and the guy's sitting in front of it, and they've mapped his face to whatever the cat. So if he blinks, the cat blinks. If he looks to the left, the cat looks to the left. If he opens his mouth to say something, the cat opens its mouth. So, he's doing, and I think this was during pandemic times, he was going in and doing a legal proceeding with the judge, and he didn't know how to turn this off.
Yeah.
It was incredibly humorous.
When your kids have silly video filters, they look like.
Okay, that music tells me that you have wasted, I won't say wasted, but hopefully learned some stuff. And I want to thank both Dennis and Chris for coming in today. We really appreciate it. Well, Nick takes a well-deserved day off. But hey, don't worry. We'll be back again next Saturday to do this all over again. Because you know what? You're just appreciative of all the great information as we hear every week from our listeners and how much you learn each week. So you don't want to miss out. We will be back next Saturday at the same time to take more of your question. So hope to see you in
166 hours.
166 hours. I could never remember that, but Nick always does. So see you next week and have fun, folks.
Here's another I Love New York travel tip.